TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I guess I missed the memo. You didn't tell me we were going to the Renaissance Fair today. I feel woefully undressed, but I have to say, I love your costume.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It took me a long time to make this, Chris, and I'm glad you noticed. So, you know, it was a lot of hard work.
Well, not only did I notice, Matthew, but my princess Runa applauds you. I have to say, I did love Christina Chong in this episode because her character was so opposite of La'an.
It's very true. It's very true.
Yes, everyone, today we're going to talk about the eighth episode of Strange New Worlds, The Elysian Kingdom. Here is a quick rundown of the story. While conducting a routine survey of the Jonisian Nebula, the Enterprise becomes stuck in a cloud of gas known as Debra. Soon the crew finds themselves as characters from the Kingdom of Elysian, the book which Dr. Mbenga regularly reads to his daughter. To return everyone to normal, he and Hemmer, the only other person unaffected, must defeat Queen Nev. And in the end, Mbenga must also let his daughter go so that she can live her life free of illness and explore space with Debra. So, Matthew, are you ready to talk about this story?
I think so.
It was a very unexpected twist in Strange New Worlds at this point. When we only have 10 episodes for the season, we have 3 episodes to go. We're waiting for that story about Ortegas. We're waiting for that story about Hemmer. Others we haven't explored as much yet, and instead we get this journey into the book. Let's just start by talking to the book. So They've been setting this up all season, with Mbenga reading this book to his daughter. And the book, by the way, I don't know if you noticed, written by someone familiar to us, Benny Russell, which we can talk about a little bit later, I would like to. But they have been leading us towards this. We just didn't know that that's where they were going to go with the resolution of the story about his daughter being sick. So looking at it in that sense, where bit by bit, we've been getting parts of this book leading to the story. What did you think about it?
I mean, I think you're absolutely right in the sense that I don't think anybody watching this show, over the last 7 episodes thought, man, I know that they're going to fix Mbenga's daughter and it's going to involve a fairy tale.
Right.
I don't think anybody would have thought that. And so I'm like, I'm really struggling because it's hard to like even know what to say, honestly, about this episode in the sense of like, yeah, I mean, I think the book is fun. You know, I love fairy tales. You know, I love a well-written fantasy stories and everything. So the fact that Mbenga's daughter loves these type of stories too, I think is really fun, especially for, you know, somebody who spends so much time barely cognizant of the living world. I mean, you know, in the pattern buffer, you don't realize you're there. It's like sleeping. I mean, who knows if you even dream, transporter dreams. Yeah. Is that a thing?
Well, Hoshi kind of had one, one time.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it is definitely very interesting. And in many ways, what's most interesting about it is that you get kind of a fairy tale ending to the story as well. Her magically being fixed, you know, and in some ways, you know, it's more anything, you know, they talk about anything that we can't understand scientifically, we call magic, you know, and so this is really just indistinguishable from magic, even though there must be some sort of science behind it. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. What did you feel, Chris, this being in the Book of Elysia you know, everybody dressed up in quite a, you know, it's silly. Yeah, and I would say, too, so, I mean, the overacting here is way overacting.
that's true.
In the sense of being at like, it felt kind of like you were at a child's play, you know, at a local playhouse. So,
yeah. Well, of course, that was done on purpose, but I don't know. I have mixed feelings on it. About the overacting part, I kind of thought Anson Mount's stuff was funny because he's obviously hamming it up, overacting, mm-hmm. being ridiculous to contrast with his normal character as the captain. When I watched it the second time, it really stood out how they set up his character for the role in the fairy tale, where he leans back and he's telling Spock he could get used to this. You know, nobody's shooting at them. Nothing's going on. They're just doing science. They're kind of relaxing. And they set him up as this character who would like to just take it easy for a while and not have to be in charge all the time. And then that's who he turns out to be in the story. So they did set that up. I liked seeing, as I mentioned at the beginning, Christina Chong's character just completely over the top with her dog, which is actually her dog, by the way. That's Christina Chong's
That's
own
funny.
Pet dog, which is also named Runa, just like the dog in the show. But the real dog's name is Runa Ewok, which is a great name for a dog. And I also noticed the second time how I think it's Mabinga's talking to her after she had been talking, and the dog is just looking up at her face and then licking her neck. And I can imagine any dog doing that, but mm-hmm. dogs who are actors are very well trained and don't see them doing that as often. And that's where I really felt like the connection between her and the dog as the dog's own owner in real life. So anyway, rambling here, as I'm prone to do these days, I thought the story was fun, but I also felt like it's really early to be doing this kind of story because I want to know the characters even more before we're thrown into a story like this. Now, I will say that I feel like I know these characters pretty well. After 7 episodes, we've talked about that before as well. But when they've done episodes like this in the past, usually we've had more stories leading up to it. It's not the 8th episode out of the gate. And I get the desire to do a story like this. And I do think it fits with the TOS tone of this series. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Shore Leave. It reminds me a little bit of The Squire of Gothos. It reminds me of stories like Cupid on the Next Generation. These kinds of stories are fun, but I think that they work better in the more traditional format where you have longer seasons. So it's this one fun story in the midst of all these other stories that are going on. And here, when you only have 10 episodes to work with and you use one of them for this type of story, especially in the first season when viewers are still wanting to explore other characters in detail in the way that we have been presented some of the characters so far, I think it's a very tricky thing to do creatively.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and I'm glad you brought that up because I will say, one of the things that we've mentioned about the show is just how quickly you've kind of gotten a chance to know the characters. And I think they've done a really good job archetypally of creating these characters so that you know who they are. So this didn't feel quite as jarring as, say, when they did this on Deep Space Nine in the first season. But I think really what it came down, and not that, you know, that the episode is fun and silly and all of these type of things, but I just, for myself personally, and so I'm not like necessarily judging the episode or whatever, I just don't know if this is the story I really desired to see fix Umbenga's daughter situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really what it comes down to. Like, I don't have a problem with this episode at all, but the fact that it came down to this and this resolution just kind of like, I don't know, it felt like a huge easy button. And I'm a little bit disappointed that they took such an easy way out. Just like, his daughter's fixed. She's gone. She's happy. She's all these things. She's going to literally live forever now, apparently, probably. Yeah. And so it's just, I don't know. It was a very strange thing. Now, there's a whole other side. I will definitely talk about that, I think, later, of one of the things I think this represents that I thought was really beautiful. But I just, this whole episode just kind of left me feeling, huh. That's just that's a choice, you know, and I just don't know if the choice really worked for me, as I'm sure maybe it, and I'm sure it did, probably worked for a lot of other fans. I'm sure there are fans who absolutely love this episode and thought it was, you know, phenomenal from start to finish. And, you know, so that's just where I landed with the episode. So I'm not making a judgment on, I don't want people to hear me like I hate this episode or anything, or I'm just getting on it. It's just, that's just how it hit me personally, watching it even twice. I just kind of came away with this kind of really mixed feeling of like, I don't really even know necessarily how to feel with this episode because it's so silly and trying to be so serious all at the same time. And to me, that didn't necessarily message as well as I would have wanted it to.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, that sometimes it works well, and we have praised episodes for having a lighthearted or comedic storyline and also having a serious message or a serious storyline. I mean, last week's episode was like that a bit, the Serene Squall. What was going on the pirate ship with Pike and the crew was a bit on the comedic side, while what was going on with Spock and Aspen on the Enterprise was a lot more serious. But here, the gap between the two is really quite wide. And I see what you say about an easy button for resolving the situation with Mabinga's daughter. I didn't have quite the same reaction as far as it being an easy button. I probably would have preferred for them to find a solution in a regular episode where there's a more scientific solution to it, a medical solution, because he's a doctor.
Sure.
And he spent his years looking for a medical solution to his daughter's problem.
Right.
And instead, what he gets is this gas cloud that his daughter names Deborah after her mother, which is fine. I mean, that makes sense to me. And I think that gave it a family connection, and that was good. But my problem, okay, let's jump ahead. One of the things I put on the outline was Rukia's resolution, because I did want to talk about the ending of this, because when I watched this episode the first time, I was kind of enjoying the fun of it and the characters. And like, I love seeing Jess Bush's character in here as well. It was great. But I was just kind of playing along, you know, like it's a Cupid style episode. And then they got to the stuff with his daughter at the end. And then as a father, it did move me a bit. And I'm at a point right now in my life where my son finished university this spring, and he has now started his first real world job at a company. And he still lives with me right now, but in a few months, he'll be moving on. And so I have to let him go. And that's very difficult as a parent to let go like that. And now it's a different situation because there's nothing wrong with him. It's not like Rukia here who's ill, and Mabinga has to let her go as a way of solving this medical condition that she has so that she can live her life. So that's a different, but just as a parent, when he gives her the choice and he respects her choice and he lets her go so she can go off to the cloud and she will be fine. That's very difficult for him as a father. And what they did in the story that I did not like, and maybe it's a cultural thing, because it reminded me of something that Disney did to my favorite Japanese animation film, which in English is called Spirited Away by Miyazaki.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know.
It's a wonderful film, and Disney ruins the ending in the US version of the film because they added dialogue at the end of the film that's not there in the Japanese version. And it creates just like this fairy tale ending. Everything is okay. In the original version, Senchan, who, what is her name in English? Chihiro, she's called in the film. She's coming back to her parents here in the car, and they're going to be moving, and they're telling her to hurry up, let's go. And they drive away. That's the ending of the film. And so as the viewer, you're left with, are the things that Senchan experienced real? How did it affect her mentally and emotionally? How will she cope with it? It's sort of an open-ended message. And to me, that's a very important part of that movie. But in the American version of that film, she comes back to her parents and they talk about moving away, but her father says that she'll be going to a new school and a new home, and it's a bit scary. And then she confidently says, I think I can handle it. I'll be okay. Everything's fine, right? But the point of that story wasn't that everything was fine with her at the end of the story. But for some reason, they felt the need to give it that ending. And that's what they did here, too. When Rukia went away to the cloud and Mabinga had to let her go, the way I wanted that story to end was he has faith that his daughter is safe now. And he has to personally cope. We don't need to be told what he's thinking, but he has to personally cope with this change in his life and the end of this journey for his daughter and letting her go. But instead, they instantly have her come back as an adult and tell him that all these years have passed for her and she's done all this exploration. She's so happy now and everything's fine. And for me, that kind of spoiled the strength of this story and resolution for Mabinga and his daughter.
It's interesting your reaction was that. Mine was the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Because when it happened, before she came back, all I could think was, he just sentenced her to life everlasting with an entity he knows nothing about. It's a big risk, you know?
Yeah.
And so I thought through a lot of different things in the sense that, you know, the idea that she has this incurable disease so far and he has not been able to help her and, you know, to do anything to keep her from dying. In fact, she's only getting worse. And so what I came down to and the place where this episode came to something that I thought was really beautiful was, to me, this kind of represented almost like an adoption story. Mbenga cannot take care of his daughter in a way that is going to keep her healthy and safe and the way he would want to, right? And so in the end, the adoption of his daughter by this entity will not only give his daughter the life she could never have had, that he could never have given her, you know, all he can offer her is the possibility of death with the slight possibility that she may get better one day. Like this, you know, so there's this beauty to me in the idea of it being an adoption story. And so actually for myself, her coming back and telling him she was okay was letting him know he had made the right decision, because otherwise I feel like to me, as a father, as somebody who's not a father, but, you know, if I had kids, I would want to know basically that I had made the right decision. In the same way, you know, anyone who gives up their child for adoption, a lot of them want to know that their child has a good life with a good family and kind of maybe have some updates every once in a while. Not everybody does, but there are many who do. They want to kind of see that that basically they made the right decision. So that's kind of how I took it. And if it had not happened, I think I would have been... I think it would have been hard for me with the episode to not have had the clarification from her to let him know he had actually done the right thing. Because, too, again, just on the other side, thinking of the fact that you might live forever, you know, like, well, we've already seen even Q get bored, you know, so like that opportunity, all those things were swirling around in my mind, which made the end of the episode very interesting and much more poignant and like kind of like beautiful. The rest of the episode, I found it was just kind of a very strange way to get there. And
yeah,
but that part, so I love that we have completely opposite reactions to that because it, you know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah. I hear what you say completely. And if you think of it as an adoption story, that's a great point. I didn't think of it as an adoption story, so I didn't go down that path.
I honestly didn't until I was like trying to like think through the episode. I was like, is there anything that I've liked here? And then that clicked in my brain and I was like, okay, that actually really helps me come to grips with a lot of the story.
Yeah. But it's a good point, and I think that is a very valid way to read the episode. We don't know anything else about this entity, which is part of your point that Mbinga doesn't know either.
Right.
But you could see it as the entity adopting her.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, I get the feeling that this entity is very lonely. Mm-hmm. It reminds me a little bit of Nagilum on The Next Generation, but with good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
And that does make sense. I think that if I were in Mbinga's shoes, of course I would want to know if she's okay.
Right.
So when I say that I don't like the ending being having a bow tied on it at the end, doesn't mean I want Mbinga to worry all his life about his daughter. I don't mean that. I'm merely looking at it as a viewer taking in a story that might allow us to think more about life as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I really appreciate you bringing up, like, I love the connection with Spirited Away, you know, like, I think that's kind of a phenomenal connection because those movies have such an influence on American cinema and, you know, Japanese storytelling and animation, obviously, from George Lucas all the way forward, have had a massive influence on a lot of storytellers now. So I think that's really neat.
I remember the first time I watched Spirited Away in English and I got to the end, I was shocked. I was like, what? What? This is not in the movie. And then I went and checked because I had a DVD. It also had French on it. And I checked the French and the French ends the same way as the Japanese version does. So it's just the American version. And I said earlier that maybe it's a cultural thing. And as you know, I think most listeners know, I've lived in Japan almost all my adult life. So culturally, I'm caught between cultures, but I'm quite Japanese as well. And I often feel like American culture needs to have this kind of happy ending tacked onto the end of something, compared with our culture here and some other cultures. So I feel like that's why it was changed, maybe. And Disney was the distributor. And so, but going back anyway to this is an adoption story and Mbinga knowing everything's okay, I think the way I would have preferred for it to be handled would be if she came back early next season. Because if she's now living as an essentially a non-corporeal being, and she will live forever, perhaps, she could come back to the Enterprise no matter where it is. She could see her father want to go visit him. And I think a story where she comes back maybe 5-6 episodes from now, and then he learns that everything is okay, for me, would be stronger storytelling than the way it was done here, where it's just almost instant.
No, and I think that's honestly one of the reasons that I kind of said easy button, because it almost feels like the story is basically wrapped up, and if we never see her again, and I think that's not quite, I think we're basically hitting on the same thing very much, just from different angles. And so I'm right there with you. And I think that's kind of the thing that, I struggled with again, just with the show, of this kind of even being the resolution for her, like you said, and even the like mumbo jumbo about this being some sort of brain that just pops into being, you know, from nothing. I'm like, guys, you don't understand science, do you? Because like, a perfect order doesn't come from chaos. That's not how science works. So the idea that they would even have that part seemed to just really stretch credulity as well. And so, the whole thing just didn't feel like it was as strong as I would have wanted it to. And especially since, another knock on the episode for me is that we already gave Mbenga this idea of how to fix his daughter from a previous episode. So episode seems moot at this point, in the sense of like, well, that didn't ever play out as a storyline. It's like, we didn't follow through with that.
Yeah.
And it's like, that would have been much more exciting to kind of see him make a breakthrough in that than have this a literal fairy book ending.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where you see the strength of past Star Trek. Some people knock Enterprise for the fact that Rick Berman and Brannon Braga wrote so many of the episodes through the first couple of seasons of that show. But there's also a continuity there, because they know what they're doing with the characters and where things are going. And if you look at DS9, that's where you see the strength of that writer's room that show had, where they knew what they had established, they knew where they might go with it, and they were able to connect things. And I feel like here we're getting these stories, which in isolation may be fun, may be interesting stories, but that cohesion isn't there, and you end up with a situation where 2 episodes ago, you get a potential medical solution to this problem that Rukia has, and then here they resolve it in a completely different and unscientific way. But
Well, and I mean, too, just I think anybody who's listened to The Orb or whatever, I don't have any issue with it being kind of unscientific or miraculous even, right? In the sense of like, you know, an actual miracle. But this just, I mean, it didn't strike me as the beauty of having the prophets intervene or something like that. It really just felt like a storybook. And so far this show has been, you know, I would say much more realistic. I mean, you think back a couple episodes when we were talking about child sacrifice and like for the greater good possibly and all that kind of stuff. I mean, so then to do this just seemed like a very off-kilter episode for where we've been the whole season for you know, and we have had our silly episode, right, with Spock a Monk, but that even was an episode to which that silliness was actually very focused on helping us understand those two characters and other characters around them in a better way. So this is also an episode to which, like, let's just talk about it. You know, we got Hemmer back.
Okay.
Which is great.
Yeah.
But he's a prop in the show. We learn nothing about him as a character, really.
Yeah.
And I found that really disappointing that we use him and we haven't really seen him. And the only time we use him is just literally as we need him as a plot point and not a character point.
Yeah. I've been thinking about that as well. I was very glad to see him because, as I've been saying on here, I want to see more of him. It felt a little bit odd to me that he had such a central role in this story, but as you say, he is essentially a prop to allow Mbenga as the king to resolve things. He's the only one who's not affected other than Mbenga, which kind of made sense to me, given his abilities and his background. But it also felt a little bit odd that he has such a central role in this story when we haven't seen him very much. I think this is the fourth episode that he's been in out of eight. Is that right? Or the fifth episode out of eight anyway that he's been
in. Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's the fourth episode and somebody, I'm sure somebody will let us know.
I think
know,
it's the fourth, but it may be the fifth. And I'm not counting him like showing up at the very end of the first one because that, he wasn't really in the episode. So again, it's a case where I feel like if they spent more time building that character, then it would work better for me here because it wouldn't feel so much like, okay, we need somebody. We want all these other people to play these characters that are opposite or at least different in the case of Spock from their normal character. We need someone who can help Mbenga. Who is it going to be? Mm-hmm. Oh, let's have it be him. It felt, you know, a little bit like that to me. And again, it's not a big complaint. Like, that's the hard thing about discussing this episode is that it's not that I dislike the episode. It just felt off kilter. And that's another aspect of it. So yeah, we have Himmer back and we haven't seen very much of him up to this point.
Yeah, I'm right there with you because I do think that there's just this separation of story, and for something so powerful to happen to Mbenga and something so silly to be happening at the same time, I think it's really the tone doesn't mesh as well as, say, again, I think A Monk Time made that work perfectly. Here, I just don't feel like the two create one. It's more like I got one part and another part, and it's kind of a little bit like oil and water, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say earlier about the scientific aspects of the show and this consciousness just kind of forming out of a nebula, not making a lot of sense. That part, it's overall okay to me in the sense of this being a trying to capture the spirit of the original series because, you know, TOS wasn't particularly a scientific show either. And you would have things just happen that probably don't make much sense if you really think about it. But we went with that with the original series. It's one of the defining characteristics of the show. And so for them to do that here, I think, does capture the spirit of the material that they're trying to bring back to us. So, you know, that part worked okay, but
yeah, and I could definitely see that, you know, again, I think my reaction kind of comes from the season so far and just feeling like this episode didn't quite jive with some of the other things that we had gotten. And, you know, again, that's really it. And I will say this, I think this kind of comes down to, and this is why I'm like, I'm not being really hard in the sense of like, oh, I think this episode was terrible. And this is why I think this is really about personal taste in this. And I don't think it is as much about like whether or not this was really bad, or a wrong choice or any of those type of things, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just, for me, this story and for what it was trying to do did not quite work, I think, in the way that they're hoping it would work for the audience.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, I think that means that it probably did for other people. I'm sure it did. It was not for me. So,
yeah, I'm sure some people absolutely loved it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that's great. And what I will say about it is it's a beautifully shot, beautifully produced episode.
Yes.
It will probably be nominated for costume design. It looks fantastic. And the color grading also really stands out to me. It's just really beautiful. The combination of colors in the set, in the costumes and everything. It's really well done. And before the episode aired, I did see Anson Mount tweet, "Tune in this week and see," these are not his exact words, but "tune in this week and see the episode where we had some of the most fun we had shooting the whole season." And I think you can see that on the screen too. I'm sure that the actors absolutely had a blast doing this episode.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they did. And I think I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I do think, you know, this is definitely an episode where the production value is beautiful. I mean, the work that they did to recreate the Enterprise in this way was really fun. All the costumes do look like something that just came out of a major motion picture of a new, you know, kids fairy tale story. So all of that's great. You know, it wasn't, none of that was at fault here at all. And one more disconnect for me that happened too is just that, you know, we see the whole scene where he's working on a cure. He's looking to find a cure, and then it blows up in his face. And like you, that actually has nothing to do with the rest of the episode, really, in the sense that like the medicine coming at him, like,
that.
You know, it's like, so I was really, it was one of those places where there just were some things that just don't quite connect throughout the entire episode the way you would want. As much as we were talking about how this episode doesn't connect with the previous episode and the possible cure. So it's like all of those things, just something just wasn't quite working. So
it's interesting that you bring that up, because I've been thinking about that quite a bit, him mixing those compounds, trying to figure out for myself whether there's a connection or not. So to say that it doesn't connect is completely accurate, because no, it doesn't connect when you're watching it. In terms of what the writers were going for, I'm not sure, because at first I thought there was a connection, and then I thought there wasn't, and then later watching again, I thought, well, maybe there is. I'm wondering if when that compound, it's a chemical 3QND, whatever that means, when that blows up and then the computer puts the quarantine field around it, I'm assuming that Mbenga inhaled some of this chemical. And when he's in the turbo lift going to the bridge, he's sweating. He looks like he doesn't feel well. And then the doors open, and then it's the fairy tale. And so I am wondering if there is a connection there, an intended connection there, that whatever he was mixing up caused him to have these hallucinations. But then later it's explained that there's this consciousness in the cloud, and I take it as being that this consciousness is doing something like what Q would have done, or what Trelane would have done, and literally has put people into this story. So I don't know if there was like this one idea with the writing, and then it went to another idea and they got mixed up, or if the compound didn't mean anything at all. If the compound means nothing at all, it almost feels like filler just to create a little bit of separation between the opening scene and when the fairy tale starts, because you can't go right into it. So you need them to be doing something in between.
Yep.
And then you need to bring another regular character in. So you have Una come in as herself before the transformation happens. Yeah.
I mean, it did. And maybe the scene there too is just meant to show kind of that he's in a dead end, everything he's trying, you know.
But it
almost feels like what would have been more effective there and to make his decision at the end make even more sense would be to even have the computer scrolling through a log that showed 42,000 different things that he's tried. You know, literally a huge long list, you know, so that it just helps us understand really he has tried everything he can think of, and he's at his wit's end, you know. And there's just some things where the execution of the episode doesn't quite meet, I think, exactly what it needs to really come together as a fully realized story to me. It's funny because as we're recording, we just talked about Kenobi and the 602 Club, and that episode's coming out, and there's much of that series where it's like, I understand what they're going for, but there's places here where the actual execution is not quite matching what you're trying to do.
You see that quite a bit in TV writing.
Yes, you do.
Let me ask you one more quick thing, because I mentioned it at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that the book that he reads to his daughter, The Kingdom of Elysian, is written by Benny Russell. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, the way I take it is it's just a cute on-screen nod, an Easter egg of sorts, winking at past Star Trek. That's all I take it as. However, what it does essentially mean is that in universe, Benny Russell was a real person who was a real author. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, as my fellow co-host on The Orb and my fellow Niner, how you feel about that, because that's a case where I feel that the writers do something that they think is cute without considering the repercussions of it in storytelling. I think the strength of Far Beyond the Stars comes from Sisko having this vision of the past where he was this writer, Benny Russell. And if you make Benny Russell a real person in this universe, it really changes that, I feel. How do you see that?
I honestly wasn't paying attention to the episode close enough in the sense of like looking at the book with that detail. So I missed
that. That's why it's an Easter egg.
Yeah.
And not like an intended change to canon. Yeah.
I'm willing to say that it's interesting, the idea that there was a historical Benny Russell and... Mm-hmm. That the prophet's vision for Sisko is something that reached back into the past of humanity, something that we know is close to him, the idea of Black Americans specifically and their struggle. It's very much a part of Sisko, even though he's hundreds of years in the future. You know, it's very much a part of him and what, you know, he remembers history, right? So that they would have used that, and then what we see of Benny Russell is a much more personalized story for Sisko than necessarily exactly what happened to the real Benny Russell.
Yeah.
So, I can make all of that work, but I am more on the side with you in the sense that I think it means much more for that to have been something that was between the prophets and Sisko.
Yeah.
And not something that we would just kind of willy-nilly throw out and say, it was a real character. I mean, I can make it work and I can retcon it in my, fan brain and everything like I just did, but it's not something I really want to have to do, because in many ways, for Deep Space Nine, and I don't mean this word sacrilegiously, but it's sacred, right? It's a sacred thing between Sisko and the prophets. And, he turns out to be a god, right? You know, so of course it's sacred. Yeah. I think I'm there with you in the sense that I don't love having to try and like put that together.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. Yeah. I can make it work, but I prefer that it remain, like you say, between Benjamin, Sisko, and the prophets. And I think that's where the strength of that story is most powerful.
Yeah, I think so.
If you keep it that way. All right, all right. Well, let's go with final thoughts here and ratings. What do you have to say here in closing about this story?
I mean, this is it's a really interesting episode and one that I kind of have struggled with ever since I saw it last week. And then rewatching it this week, I've just really found it to be kind of a difficult episode to get my mind around. To me personally, I think it's really the weakest episode of the series so far. I think that the execution here is just not quite what it wants to be. You know, I think even last week, you know, we were talking about that episode and the way that it felt like some of the stuff was a little bit over the top or whatever. But again, it was still working. And this one just doesn't quite congeal for me and come together, I think, in the way that the writers want. And so I would say it's, I'm going to be generous. I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 yapping dogs. That's where I'm going to land with this one.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm really mixed. I was thinking how to discuss this episode. And I mean, I think today we hit on a core message that was something that we could pull from the episode and that we both have thoughts and feelings about. As an overall episode, it's fun. I did enjoy seeing the actors play these other characters. I love it creatively, as I mentioned, visually. Beautiful episode. I liked that they took an element that's been playing through the season with the storybook, and then they brought us to an end with that, tied that all together, and made it mean something. I'm not wild about the resolution for his daughter. And overall, it's an episode that I can see myself coming back to it in the future and rewatching it from time to time when I want something different and fun and light. And I think most of the episode is that. The stuff with his daughter really comes in at the end of the episode. But I would like to see this kind of episode maybe in season 3 after we've had 30-something episodes. I don't like that it falls in the 8 slot when we still have character exploration that needs to be done. That's sort of the biggest thing for me. Yeah. And I think that this episode, it's the kind of episode that I think Star Trek should do. Most of the Star Trek series have had an episode like this. Even Voyager had Heroes and Demons with the Beowulf story. Mm-hmm. And that actually was very early in the season. And I don't like that episode for a similar reason. It just comes very early in season 1 when it should have come later on if they were going to do that.
Yeah, this is, I think you're absolutely right. It just seems to be one of those Star Trek tropes that they cannot get away from. And they continually keep repeating in so many of the seasons around the same time, which is a really interesting thing, you know?
I don't think they should get away from it because I think it is fine. And I think it has a place in Star Trek. Yeah. And I think they should do them. I just think that doing it here in this series, as the 8th episode, highlights the weakness of the streaming TV service format where you do 10 episode seasons.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's ultimately where I come down on this. Yeah. All right. Well, my rating for this episode, I guess I'll be generous like you as well and give it 6 confused kings.
That's fantastic.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on this episode for sure. I imagine there are a lot of differing opinions out there about this one. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're already a member, you know how it works. But if not, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right up. If not, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. We want it to be different from the standard Star Trek group on Facebook. It's meant to be an extension of the discussions here on the podcasts, and so that's why we ask you those questions. And once you're in there, you will see a post for this episode on the timeline, and you can leave your comments there, share them with fellow listeners and Matthew and me. If you'd like to send us email, you can do that as well. Just go to our website, trek.fm/contact. You'll find a form there. Use that form, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and that'll come to Matthew and me by Pony Express. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not trying to find the perfect place to hide the Mercury Stone, where can people find you?
Chris, you know, I've just been working and striving, and I just cannot find the right place. So maybe somebody can help me out with that. So hit me up on social media under the name MattRushing02, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, any of those type of places. Of course, I mentioned the 602 Club, which is our whole other side of the network devoted to the fandoms we love outside of Star Trek, like Star Wars or Bond or Marvel, DC, and the list goes on and on. So check that out. You can also find me doing literary treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We've talked about extensively here, Chris, actually, The Orb, where we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We've got Warp 5, where we talk about Star Trek Enterprise, and The Artificial Tango about Star Trek Picard. Over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me doing two shows. One is Completed. I did that with Dre Kaufman, and we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, on a show called Owl Post. And then I'm doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, when you are not trying to figure out how in the world you ended up in these tights, where can people find you?
Well, as part of figuring that out, you can find me swimming my way out of the swamp of infinite deaths on my way to Lady Audrey's woods. And once I get there, you can tune into me elsewhere on the network, doing the shows that you and I do together, which you mentioned. Also, Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time. There is Interphase, and I'm in many episodes on many shows in the back catalog. So tune into those if you'd like to hear more of my thoughts about Star Trek. And if you'd like to chat, you can find me on social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my name everywhere in social media, but Twitter is where I'm most active, and I'd love to hear from you there. If you would like to help us keep this show and everything that we're doing in the network going, we could definitely use your help. If you'd like to become involved in the network, become an associate producer, get involved in other ways, just visit patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without the support of our listeners. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us right now. We really greatly appreciate all of your help. And if you're not supporting us, we hope that you will do so. Thank you so much. Well, Matthew, this was an interesting discussion. I'm going to get ready for next week, but I'm just wondering here, are you going to say the thing?
Chris, it's time to saddle up and lock and load.